Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
This week we talk about why in vaccinations we trust.
Then we'll speak with professor and author Juan Cole. He's an expert on Afghanistan.
About the Taliban takeover and history in Afghanistan. This is the news in brief from the United Nations. As the global aid community marked World Humanitarian Day on Thursday, UN Chief Antonio Guterres paid tribute to all those who help people in need before urging support for the day's hashtag the human race campaign and its focus on protecting the world's most vulnerable from the climate emergency. Humanitarian workers are here to help the world's most vulnerable people when disaster strikes, the Secretary-General said, adding that in the past 20 years, shootings, kidnappings and other attacks on humanitarian organisations have increased tenfold. This year alone, at least 72 humanitarian workers have been killed in conflict zones. Turning to this year's campaign for World Humanitarian Day, hashtag the human race, which highlights how climate extremes are causing misery across the world and overwhelming frontline responders, Mr. Guterres warned that the climate emergency is a race we are losing, but it's a race we can and must win. Hosting on exercise platform Strava, participants are asked to clock 100 minutes of exercise for the World Humanitarian Day campaign. They can run, roll, ride, walk, swim, kick or hit a ball. Each action will count towards helping us carry our message to world leaders when they meet at the UN Climate Change Conference in November, said UN Humanitarian Coordinating Office OCHA, which is behind the campaign. The global initiative to save the planet's biodiversity on land and water must not be allowed to threaten the world's most vulnerable people, a top human rights expert said on Thursday. Under a UN-backed Global Biodiversity Framework draft agreement, countries have agreed to protect 30% of the planet and restore at least 20% by 2030. UN Special Rapporteur David Boyd said that although the plan was essential to conservation efforts, it must not be achieved at the expense of further human rights violations against indigenous and other rural people. Minorities, including people of African descent, rural women and rural youth, were not adequately prioritised in the current draft plan, Mr. Boyd insisted, despite the fact that their knowledge and conservation contributions must be recognised, respected and supported. The independent rights expert, who reports to the Human Rights Council, cautioned against what he called fortress conservation approaches that aim to restore pristine wilderness where no humans live. The call comes ahead of an October conference in Kunming, China, where representatives of 190 countries will seek to finalise the UN post-2020 Global Biodiversity Framework. UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres has led a call for UN peacekeepers to fully embrace new technology to respond to ever-changing challenges. Outlining his strategy for the digital transformation of UN peacekeeping, Mr. Guterres told the Security Council that 21st century innovations were changing the nature of conflict and having an indelible impact on civilians. The organization's 12 peacekeeping operations already use many digital tools in their daily work, such as unmanned aerial vehicles and online platforms that provide information about the kind of terrain that blue helmets should expect to encounter. But it's essential that this process picks up speed to improve the UN's agility, anticipation and responsiveness to conflicts, Mr. Guterres insisted, before adding that peace operations should develop clear principles on the use of digital tools and undertake human rights due diligence wherever there is potential for harm. Katie Dartford, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Sky.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and hello, all you vaccinated heathens and infidels who put your trust in science and not in deities.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host of Free Thought Radio. This is the August 19th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Our engineer today is Grant Blaschka, who's producing this show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, which is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. So, Grant, you're in the studio there. You got all that new equipment. Is everything working okay?
Oh, it's working great, Dan. I believe this will be my 11th episode in the studio now.
Wow, so you're finally figuring it out here. It was a bit of a steep learning curve, wasn't it, there for a while?
A little bit at the beginning with all the new equipment, but it's going well.
But don't push that green button. It makes a really horrible squeaky sound if you do that. So
yeah, I was made aware of that.
Yeah, don't do that.
So Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and regular listeners know we are a state church watchdog and the nation's largest association of freethinkers. That means atheists, agnostics, skeptics. We have a few deists, infidels and heathens of any and all persuasions, and we who are also free from religion in your life personally. So this is radio for you, and we hope that you will join us if you're not already a member at ffrf.org and swell our ranks.
Afghanistan is in the news this week. Quite a drama was happening over there. Our guest in the second half of today's show will be Juan Cole. He's an expert on the modern Middle East and the modern Southeast Asia.
And joining us in that discussion will be FFRF's Director of Communications, Amitabh Paul, who knows a lot about Afghanistan. And, of course, we're also concerned about what will happen to the women, and these horrific scenes at the airport are heartbreaking.
We'll talk with them in the second half of the show. This Sunday is the anniversary of the birthday of the French composer Claude Debussy. He was born August 22, 1862. Debussy rejected all creeds. He said, "I do not practice religion in accordance with the sacred rites. I have made mysterious nature my religion." So listen for some of Debussy's music today, including Clair de Lune, La Mer, Arabesque No. 1, and Gardens in the Rain, which is played by Jared Dunn on the FFRF Diane Yule Steinway Piano right here in Freethought Hall.
You can learn more about the lives and views of contemporary and historic freethinkers like Debussy at our Freethought of the Day website at ffrf.org/day.
We also have a TV show and a weekly Facebook Live Ask an Atheist show. Yesterday, Annie Laurie was joined by FFRF attorney Ryan Jane on Ask an Atheist to talk with sociology professor and author Ryan Cragen. He's at the University of Tampa, about his article that appeared this week in the Chronicle of Philanthropy. That article is called "Amid Calls to Tax the Churches, What and How Much Do U.S. Religious Organizations Not Pay?"
When I asked Professor Cragen for an example of how church tax exemption is impacting cities, he had a ready reply concerning churches near where he lives.
I went to Manatee County, which is a county right next to where I live here in Florida, and went to their property appraiser's website. Amazingly, and most counties do not do this, they listed on each property whether it was tax exempt for a religious reason or not. So I found that list and then I scraped it. So I used some software that I have and scraped all of the information on that property and found 360 tax exempt properties in Manatee County, which has a population of about 800,000 people. I tallied up how much that property was worth and then calculated if that property was required to pay the ad valorem taxes, so the assessed value, and the other taxes that they're required to pay, which is the same for both residential and commercial property, that would add about $8.5 million to the tax rolls of Manatee County every year, which is about 1.1% of their budget.
And then I think you point out all the things that would pay for the public good.
Yeah, so which I think is kind of fun. They have their proposed 2022 budget, and I just happened to look through it. I was like, well, what would this, you know, to put this into perspective for people, what would this actually buy? They're trying to expand their emergency medical service there, and they want to build 3 new EMS stations. So this is for ambulances. This would cover the entire cost of building all 3 of those emergency medical stations and the upgrades to all the equipment that they need for all of their ambulances, and they're trying to upgrade their 911 system, which costs another $1 million. This would cover that too. So they could build all 3 new systems, upgrade all of their equipment, and upgrade their 911 system, and all of that would be covered if churches in Manatee County paid property taxes.
So they talked about a lot more than that on the show, and you can watch that entire show on FFRF's Ask an Atheist YouTube channel, including questions from the viewing audience.
Yeah, you go to our FFRF YouTube, and there's a playlist for Ask an Atheist. Tune in next week for the live show. It airs noon central on Wednesdays. And next week, FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs will talk with Christina DeLeon, a city council member from Black Diamond, Washington State, who's standing up for secularism against a mayor and council members who are openly affiliated with white Christian nationalist groups like the Washington Three Percenters and the Proud Boys. So that's going to be a fascinating show.
With Mark Dan, yeah.
So, COVID.
COVID. So we note that the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, he's the one who warned FFRF to stay out of Texas and who we are successfully suing over his censoring of our Winter Solstice Bill of Rights display. This evangelical science denier, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, has COVID-19.
So Abbott, to his credit, did get fully vaccinated, but you're undoubtedly aware that as coronavirus hospitalizations have surged in Texas, he's resisted calls for new mandates and banned local elected officials from imposing mask or vaccine mandates, including in our public schools. Fortunately, there's a lot of resistance. The school boards are not going to be following it in many places. Yet he was taking daily COVID-19 tests, and now he's receiving monoclonal antibodies. The general population is not receiving this level of monitoring or treatment.
Now, someone else, Cardinal Raymond Burke. He's under sedation right now, and he's on a ventilator after coming down with COVID-19 here in Wisconsin. Burke has been an arch critic of the vaccines. He preposterously spread disinformation saying that the vaccines are implanting a microchip. He's rejected science, but so far, medical science is what's keeping him alive.
Burke refused communion to presidential candidate John Kerry in 2004 for being pro-choice. He protested plans by Notre Dame to give President Barack Obama an honorary degree because Obama supports abortion rights. Burke has said that the best weapon to fight the novel coronavirus is Jesus Christ.
And how well does that work?
Apparently, JC didn't come through for him.
Speaking of the pandemic, we're glad to see President Biden taking FFRF's advice, using his authority to force nursing homes to require vaccinations. He's also offering school districts federal stimulus money to offset punitive steps by anti-vaccine governors in Arizona, Florida, Iowa, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah, where the governors are banning local school districts from requiring classroom masking. Some are going so far as to say they won't pay the salaries of teachers if the masking takes place.
Or the superintendents. This week, President Biden spoke forcefully on that matter.
As we've seen throughout this pandemic, some politicians are trying to turn public safety measures, that is children wearing masks in school, into political disputes for their own political gain. Some are even trying to take power away from local educators by banning masks in school. They're setting a dangerous tone. Last week, I called school superintendents in Florida and Arizona to thank them for doing the right thing and requiring masks in their school. One of them said, "We teach science, so we follow the science." The other said, "They have a guiding principle, students first." I just couldn't agree more with what they both said. And that's why today I'm directing the Secretary of Education, an educator himself, to take additional steps to protect our children. This includes using all of his oversight authorities and legal action, if appropriate, against governors who are trying to block and intimidate local school officials and educators. If you aren't going to fight COVID-19, at least get out of the way of everyone else who's trying. We're not going to sit by as governors try to block and intimidate educators protecting our children. For example, if a governor wants to cut the pay of a hardworking education leader who requires masks in a classroom, the money from the American Rescue Plan can be used to pay that person's salary. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, says masks are critical, especially for those who are not yet vaccinated, like our children under the age of 12. So let's put politics aside. Let's follow the educators and the scientists who know a lot more about how to teach our children and keep them safe than any politician.
Amen to that. We hope Biden will go even further and that government officials at every level will take action to honor science and protect our health.
Yes, and of course we had asked Biden last week, we talked about it, that they should withhold funding to schools that don't require the school staff to be vaccinated, for example. And at the local level, I'm pretty dismayed at our local lack of leadership by Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway, Dane County Executive Joe Parisi, and the chair of the Madison and Dane County Board of Health, who we wrote and said, what you need to do is what San Francisco is doing, what New York's doing, what Italy is doing, what France is doing, and require proof of vaccination to allow people to go into places of a public accommodation, such as dining, bars, nightclubs, gyms, concerts, theaters, and any indoor events. This is working, and we had sent them a letter last week. We kind of got a brush off, and now they're just asking for indoor masking. And meanwhile, we're going to be flooded with students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, at least 20% of whom are not vaccinated. So we really hope they'll get with it, and that all public officials everywhere will start adopting these common sense and obvious measures to stem the pandemic and stop propitiating the deniers.
So in state church news, FFRF has a victory over a Florida high school where a baseball coach was praying with the students at every game and every practice. Lake Mineola High School, we wrote a letter of complaint, and the district responded saying that they have explained that the coach was ordered to cease and desist, stop praying in his official capacity. They also sent out an email to all school principals and athletic directors in the county telling them to remind coaches they can't engage in that kind of behavior.
So in other very good news this week, the Freedom from Religion Foundation has awarded over $21,000 in scholarships to the many winners of FFRF's high school essay competition for college-bound seniors, high school seniors. And we have 10 top winners, and then we gave, 17 honorable.
Yeah.
We have 11 prizes because we had a tie in the top winners, and then we gave 17 honorable mentions. They get $200. We asked them to write about why you trust science over faith and why you think society should do the same, and to give examples of how religious faith has obstructed science or to analyze a historic or current issue related to science versus religion. And we got wonderful essays. We got, was it over 150? I think I'm looking at the press release. It was almost 200 of them. So delighted with this new generation of freethinkers. It's really one of our favorite campaigns at the Freedom from Religion Foundation to reward unorthodoxy in students when there are so many religious contests that reward non-thinking. We have this contest to reward those who think.
You said they got $200, but that was just the honorable mentions.
The honorable
right?
mentions, yes. The first place starts at $3,500 and it goes down in 500 increments from there. So it's a very major. It's one of six of our competitions, and if you're a member, you help support that.
So in something international here, while the Freedom from Religion Foundation is happy that the blasphemy charges were dropped this week against an eight-year-old boy in Pakistan, we are thinking that there shouldn't even be a blasphemy law. In fact, that law required the death penalty. This eight-year-old boy had apparently peed on a rug in a religious school, and that was considered blasphemy, and he was arrested for breaking the law.
And he was facing capital punishment. They wanted to kill him.
So
But they dropped charges. There was an outcry by the media, primarily in Pakistan. We were about to do an action alert to do diplomacy on it, and then they had dropped it. But
and it was historic in our own country when last December the U.S. House and the Senate passed a bipartisan resolution authored by Jamie Raskin, who's with the Congressional Freethought Caucus, calling for the repeal of blasphemy, heresy, and apostasy laws.
And there are more than 80 countries that still have blasphemy laws, and these laws violate our most essential rights, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, and freedom of speech. And, ridiculous that we would ever have a situation like this. Of course, the situation in Pakistan in general, very poor on state church separation, and there's a lot going on between them and Afghanistan. We may talk about that later on today's show.
You know, Pakistan used to use Ireland as an excuse for blasphemy law because Ireland used to have an outdated blasphemy law, but Ireland had just gotten rid of their blasphemy law. So what is Pakistan's excuse? We should live in a world that is free to think, free to believe or not believe as we wish. So we're going to take a break. There's a little bit of Debussy, Claire de Lune, Debussy, who said nature was his religion. After the break, we're going to hear a song, Dear God. And then we're going to talk with the author and professor, Juan Cole, with FFRF's Director of Communications, Amit Paul, who are going to help us make sense of the unfolding drama right now in Afghanistan. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. And Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, working since the mid-1970s to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of non-believers, that's atheists and agnostics. And you might be surprised to know how many atheists and agnostics have really enriched the world in so many ways, not just with science and philosophy, but also with music. It's been a while since we heard the song Dear God by Andy Partridge. It was written in 1986 for their English rock band XTC, but the message of Dear God is still very relevant today.
don't believe in.
There's one thing I don't believe in. It's you, dear God.
Some great lines, if you can understand them. That was Dear God by Andy Partridge, who calls himself an atheist. And one of the questions is, Dear God, did you make disease? Well, very relevant. I remember the Ingersoll quote. He said, "Why, if there was a God, why didn't he make wellness, health, catching instead of disease?"
Well, the other quote is, prayer can't cure what it couldn't prevent, right? And why are they praying to be cured of this? That song, by the way, they almost didn't put it on the album. They thought it was going to be too controversial. And in fact, it was. And some radio stations were threatened after they played that song for questioning the existence of God. But it came quite popular in the U.S. and in Britain. So we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. We're going to talk with the author and professor Juan Cole. He's going to help us make sense of the unfolding tragedy right now in Afghanistan. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. As we are speaking, Afghanistan is in the news. We've all been watching the images on the evening news about that drama, the tragedy that's unfolding over there, people trying to escape the Taliban and all of that.
So today we are going to speak with someone who knows a lot about what is happening there, professor and author Juan Cole. To help us host our interview with Juan Cole, we are joined in studio by Amit Paul, FFRF's Director of Communications. So thanks for joining us, Amit.
Thank you, Annie Laurie, and thank you, Dan.
So, Amit, you have met our guest today.
Actually, Annie Laurie, a number of times. So Juan Cole is the Richard P. Mitchell Collegiate Professor of History at the University of Michigan, a commentator on both the historical and the modern Middle East and South Asia. Since 2002, he has written a highly popular blog, Informed Comment, and that's at juancole.com, that has gotten a lot of attention, including that of the CIA, actually, under the Bush administration. I've met Professor Cole twice, while I was at the Progressive, once he came by the office, and we bonded over store that's named eponymously in my mother's hometown, a wonderful bookstore called Ram Advani, which I'm sad to inform Professor Cole that both the owner and the bookstore is no more now. So he died a few years ago. And then I interviewed him, went to the University of Michigan, actually, and interviewed him about his then newest book called The New Arabs, How the Millennial Generation is Changing the Middle East, in which he dealt with the Arab Spring. So it's so nice, Professor Cole, to reconnect with you and to have you on our show.
Likewise, Amit.
So we talked with Professor Cole last summer in July 2020 about his new translation of a classic, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, and how Omar Khayyam's free thinking back then contrasted with the fundamentalism of the current Iranian government. He's one of the foremost experts on the social dynamics and historical foundation of Muslim societies. And of course, he's here with us to shed light, that's why, on an event that's been grabbing global headlines, the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan, and especially the implications of that for Afghan women and Afghan minorities.
So, yes, we're all happy to have you back on Free Thought Radio, Professor Cole. Thank you for joining us.
It's good to be here.
So, why don't we start with what are your reactions in general on what's going on in Afghanistan?
Well, I'm both an analyst and I'm a human being. So at the human level, I'm just really sad. I actually wrote an article in 2002, I think it was, after the overthrow of the first Taliban regime, about the situation of women in Afghanistan in the late 1990s. You know, it's not easy, actually, at that time. It wasn't easy to find out about things on the ground in Afghanistan, and I had to go try to find printed works that were written by people who had been there. But it was really quite distressing. In the first Taliban regime, they had a conviction that women really shouldn't circulate outside their homes, at least without a male guardian. And so they weren't being allowed to go to school. They weren't being allowed to go to their work. Even it was difficult for them to get to hospital. Male doctors weren't allowed to treat female patients, and most of the doctors were male. And so it was, you know, some people have called it, but it was horrible for women. And, you know, there is a new generation now in Afghanistan on both sides. There's a new generation of urban Afghans. People are more educated than they had been. The country is slightly less rural. And there's a new generation of Taliban. And we can't predict that it's going to be exactly a replay of the 1990s. But Taliban ideology is misogynist. We have to recognize that. And I suspect bad things are going to happen to women.
Professor Cole, maybe in a first, they, unlike their previous incarnation, they held a press conference and they promised to be a bit more moderate. Should we believe them?
Well, Amit, I think the people who said that might be sincere. But the problem is that the Taliban don't have a strong command and control structure, and it's a very loose movement. In fact, it's now a set of movements. I mean, the people we call Taliban actually are from several distinct streams of recent Afghan history. And so what the spokesman Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar in Doha say, and what's happening on the ground in these small towns and villages of rural Afghanistan may be quite different.
So, I don't believe them. I don't believe a word they say about how they're going to be more moderate. but I'm just speaking as a skeptical feminist. So, Professor Cole, where does their interpretation of Islam come from, and what are its roots?
Right. So, Islam is an enormous world religion to which nearly a fourth of mankind belong. And therefore, its practice is quite varied throughout continents. And the Taliban, who have become iconic in the minds of a lot of Americans as for Islam, are actually quite peculiar. They're out of the ordinary and non-mainstream. So it's a little bit as though, all Chinese thought that the QAnon shaman represented Christianity. They have their origins in 19th century India to some extent, ideologically. In India, the British conquered the place and displaced the former Mughal Muslim ruling elite. Muslims felt like they were demoted to third-class citizens, that the British were on top, and then they drew on the Hindu majority for a lot of their bureaucrats, Muslims were kind of isolated. And the Muslim-Indian response to this demotion was itself varied. Some began advocating, well, we're just going to have to compete better. And so Sir Syed Ahmad Khan founded Aligarh University, which trained Muslim young people in English and modern science, and tried to set them up to succeed in the new world. But there was a school called the Deoband School, which was a seminary, and they went in a more nativist direction in the sense that they excavated large numbers of sayings and doings attributed to the Prophet Muhammad and his companions and the first generation of Islam way back in the early 600s AD, and accepted many sayings that were considered weak or out of the mainstream by most Sunni Muslims. They remind me a little bit of Haridim, of the ultra-Orthodox Jews, in the sense that they isolated this big corpus of texts. It was like a Talmud, and then they expected all of their members to live by it every minute of the day, in every activity. And so it was a very programmed kind of life. But one of the purposes of this retrenchment was to keep Muslim youth away from British and Hindu influences and stop them kind of losing their Muslim identity. So it was a direct result of colonialism. And these seminaries spread into what is now northern Pakistan. And in the 20th century, they attracted funding once the Saudis got rich with oil from Saudi Arabia, which has its own peculiar and very rigid form of Islam, the Wahhabi sect of Islam. So those seminaries in northern Pakistan mixed the Deobandi school with the Wahhabi school. And so it was the most extreme of the Muslim theological and legal tendencies. And in the 80s, when the Soviet Union invaded and occupied Afghanistan, it created a maelstrom, a horrible set of atrocities in Afghanistan. The Soviets were quite brutal, and a lot of Afghans didn't go along with being ruled by them, and they just would ethnically cleanse villages. And so in the 80s, a million Afghans are estimated to have died, 3 million wounded, 2 million were displaced to Iran, 3 million were displaced to Pakistan, and 2 million were displaced internally. This is a country of 16 million, so we're over half right there, who were direly impacted. And the ones who went to Pakistan, were refugees. They were living in tents. They didn't have proper sewage. There were a lot of orphans amongst them. And the seminaries took in those orphan boys and raised them. And so the orphan boys, and not all of them were orphans, but the displaced Afghan kids, young men who were there in northern Pakistan, had an old school tie. They had esprit de corps. And ultimately, the Pakistani constabulary figured out that they could be deployed back into Afghanistan against the warlords who were robbing Pakistani truck drivers and so forth. So they emerged as a military force, and they're called Taliban because Taliban means seminary students.
Seminary students. We have to stop there, Professor Cole. We have to take a break. When we come back, we want to learn a little bit more about that genesis of the Taliban. And could the United States, in your opinion, have done things differently to forestall this takeover? I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
And I'm Amit Paul.
We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our conversation with professor and author Juan Cole. We have in studio with us Amit Paul, who's our Director of Communications at the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Thanks, Dan and Annie Laurie. Great to be here. And so, Professor Cole, question being asked all around the world, and it's a big question for you. Could the United States have done anything differently to forestall the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan?
I would argue that the United States caused the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it was a huge mistake for the U.S. To try to stay in Afghanistan. And Americans don't, you know, use the proper terminology for things, but the United States occupied Afghanistan militarily for 20 years. People don't like being occupied, in my experience. I mean, there were Afghans who were very happy to see the end of the Taliban in 2002. But over time, the U.S. presence palled. And, the U.S., with all those troops there, would be attacked at its forward operating bases. When you're attacked by insurgents, you know that they're based in nearby villages, and so the U.S. military would go and try to shake down the nearby villages to find out who was harboring the insurgents. They would search people's homes for arms. They would rouse people in the middle of the night, and the Afghan women would be standing there in their bedclothes and barefaced before these American 18-year-olds, and you behave like that with Afghan families who have a very strong sense of independence and privacy, and they do have to kill you. You just imagine this process of search and destroy missions going on all over the country for 20 years. You know, at first, when the Taliban fell, they were very unpopular. One opinion poll suggested only 5% of the country supported them. But over time, they came back. They became more and more popular. And there were lots of reasons for that. The other thing is the U.S. poured billions into Afghanistan. not as much on the civilian side as one would hope. I think 5 or 6 times more was spent on munitions and military armament and bombing the country than was spent on development. But a lot of the development aid went into people's pockets. And so the U.S. was making winners and sometimes fabulously corrupt cronies while other people were suffering and creating resentment. And at one point, there were reports of cargo planes coming out of Kabul just full of U.S. dollars going to Dubai. And the new Afghan elite the U.S. installed was buying up these fancy islands off of Dubai and in the Gulf. And then in 2008, that collapsed and a major bank collapsed. People lost their savings. So this was a military occupation by a foreign power that was pouring money into a small sliver of elite that was extremely corrupt. In the past 5 years, the social statistics show that the majority, the rate of poverty in Afghanistan actually increased.
So this goes back 20 years, of course, but what about how they pulled out this last month?
Well, they were taken by surprise. You stand up a government like the one in Afghanistan. It has a parliament, an elected president. It has cabinet ministries. It has a ministry of health. It has an army, a police force. And you look at that and say, well, I guess we can turn the country over to those people. And that's what Joe Biden thought. But it turns out that it was all a tissue of lies. It was a Potemkin village. It didn't have any reality behind it. And so it collapsed. The only thing that was keeping it going was the U.S. As soon as the promise of more U.S. money dried up. And also the U.S. Set up the Afghanistan military and police so that they were constantly being resupplied from the center. They weren't independent, and this was a mistake. They didn't have local depots, apparently. And so you were constantly having to send out helicopters with ammunition to these forward operating bases all over the country. And the U.S. Stopped doing that in early August, and they assumed that since they had provided the Afghanistan army with helicopters and planes and had taught them the structure, that the Afghan army would pick up the slack. And it didn't. The people who were in charge didn't know how to run an organization. This is reporting from Yaroslav Trofimov of the Wall Street Journal, who was out there. And those forward operating bases stopped having enough ammunition to fight the Taliban, so they surrendered to them. But this was a screw up of the new Afghanistan National Army that the U.S. had tried to stand up. So, I sympathize with the people who are frustrated at how chaotic the scenes are and how much suffering there is. But if you made the decision to get out, apparently this is what was going to happen. If Trump had succeeded in his plans to get out on May 1st in his second term, if he had been reelected, the same thing would have happened. It comes out from getting out.
Yeah, and what sort of alternative approach, Professor Cole, would you have preferred?
Well, an alternative approach would have required knowing that Afghanistan was a Potemkin village, that it was a facade, it was like a Hollywood prop. And I'm not, I don't have a security clearance and I'm not that foresighted, but I would have said that from the time the U.S. got out until the time the Taliban took over would be somewhere between 3 weeks and 3 months.
In about half a minute, I know this isn't very fair, but what should the world, including the United States, do now if there's, as we know, there will be significant repression of women and minorities in Afghanistan?
Sure. Well, one thing I hope, there are two things I hope. One is that the world, please, should not back an insurgency against the Taliban in order to try to unseat them. you know, go around and find disgruntled Afghans and give them money in covert operations. Afghanistan has had war since the late 70s, and it's not nice to keep this going. And the other thing is that the U.S. and the international community should not place international sanctions on the Afghan economy, which will hurt Afghans. And the U.S. has gone crazy with this sanctions business, and it has all of Iran under sanctions, and it's hurting ordinary Iranians as well. So to the extent that is possible, I would hope that the international community would put back in, once things settle down, would put back in aid missions and try to do good for Afghan people, including for women. In some ways, we face a situation like we do in Burma, where you have a government that's hostile to the international community and that is very authoritarian, does whatever it wants. But people don't give up on trying to help.
Well, that's where we have to end it. Thank you so much, Professor Juan Cole.
Yes, it's so wonderful, Professor Cole, to reconnect with you and to have you on our show.
Thank you.
And find out more about Informed Comment at JuanCole.com. That's JuanCole. And thank you, Grant, for producing the show. And thank you, listeners all over the country, in Philadelphia and New Jersey to WOOM, in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, to Community Radio in Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, KEOS in Central Texas, KLPN in Central Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, WOOL in Bellows Falls, Vermont, WRFI in Ithaca, New York. If you're listening to the podcast, give us a thumbs up on your provider and tell people to visit us at ffrf.org/radio.
And you can ask for more information, including a copy of our newspaper Free Thought Today at ffrf.org, or just join us. We'd love your support, not just for the radio, but for all of our litigation to keep religion out of government. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.